All right, so the launching part is point is Hobby Lobby. I gave it to Austin Wednesday night, and he finally pondered a few seconds and looked back at me and said, "Can you elaborate just a little bit?" David Green. David Green is the founder, owner of Hobby Lobby, did serve as its CEO for years. Started out as a picture frame company, paying handicapped people in a shop to build picture frames for him. He's worth $14.9 billion today. He ranks number 115 in the world. And if he had not given away so very much money in his lifetime, he would be worth a whole lot more than that. This is the man that went to court against the United States government several years ago to defend his right as an employer not to provide abortion pills to his employees. And won. He built the Bible Museum in Washington. And he funds his version of Christian education. He gave a $10.5 million factory or plant to Liberty University to use as support. He bought an entire campus for Zion Bible College. He gave $70 million to Oral Roberts when the son had bankrupted the school. He has chaplains in his organization, top to bottom in Hobby Lobby, that minister to their employees, and he evangelizes them. He doesn't press them, but he gives them the opportunity to find salvation. Now then, his belief system and ours are not the same. Understand that. He told Forbes magazine, however, though, you can't have a belief system on Sunday and not live it the other days. And then this is where we're headed. In that same article with Forbes, he said, if you have anything, or if I have anything, it's because it's been given to us by our Creator. So I have learned to say, and I love this line, look, this is yours, God. It is all yours. I'm going to give it to you. So that brings us to an announcement that he made back in October. I'm just going to kind of read part of it like it came to my attention. It opens up, the owner and founder of Hobby Lobby announced Friday, and this was October 21st, that he has given away ownership of the company. A decision, he says, came from when he chose God. He didn't sell it. He didn't divide it up among his children and pass it down. It's in the process of being given away. He wrote an opinion piece that was published by Fox News in which he explained how he came to that decision, how his faith guided him in his role as leader of Hobby Lobby. And he explains that his success comes from God, that he considers himself merely a steward of the company rather than the owner. He went on to challenge other business owners, said they should consider whether they are actually owners or stewards of the businesses they lead. He writes, consider the idea of where your success comes from. I have seen so many businesses with the greatest of ideas not make it. And yet others with the simplest of ideas thrive. God is the one who grants success. And with that comes responsibility to be a good manager of what's implied is that success. He said, I have certain rights, responsibilities as the owner of the company. I have the right to sell it and keep the profits for myself if I want to. Give it to my family. Now watch this. He said, that idea bothered me more and more as Hobby Lobby grew. Don't we normally think the other way? The more I can grow it, the more I can pass on. He said, the more I made, the scareder I got. Well-meaning attorneys and accountants advised me to just pass it down to my children and my grandchildren. You see that next line? It didn't seem fair to me that I might change or even ruin the future of grandchildren who had never been born yet. We think of money sometimes as the answer to everything. And the more we can pass on to our children, the better off they are. He said, my grandchildren don't need $14.9 billion. You're setting them up for failure. He said his role as steward of the company was a great responsibility, and he was not meant to take the profits for himself. That's why he pays double minimum wage. It's closed every Sunday. Closes every other day at 8 p.m. And I saw some reactions to this article. Well, maybe whoever he gives it to will open on Sunday for us heathens and infidels or whatever. Do you think that Hobby Lobby is suffering from not being open on Sundays? Or Chick-fil-A? The fact that you cannot get in their parking lot the days they are open means they're doing all right. Said, this gives me a bigger purpose than making money. Instead of going public, we're going purpose. And that's a reference back to the owner of Patagonia who recently gave his business away. Put it into the hands of a nonprofit to share the wealth and walked away. Look, I said it. His belief system is not the same as mine. I couldn't support Oral Roberts or Zion Bible or Liberty University. His version of salvation is skewed. But I want to point out some biblical views that he has that seem to elude many of us who actually have the truth. Matthew 5 through 7. Jesus comes on the scene and we get... There's a reason it's not called a sermon on a mountain. There's a reason it's called the sermon. We get the sermon of all sermons. And Jesus is introducing this whole new understanding of what has been going on in religious life. Three chapters where he introduces this upside down spiritual world. And he tells them, you've been missing the point all the way back to Exodus 20. This is righteousness that comes from the inside and flows outward. And one of the keys in that sermon is in Matthew 6. And it's our view of wealth. As he's telling this, he is telling this to a group of people who have developed the mindset that wealth equals righteousness. That God is giving you wealth because you're a good person. Remember Job? It all got taken away from you because you weren't a good person. You did something wrong. So that is the mindset of this people. And so now Jesus is saying, no, you got the wrong view. So work through 16 or 6 with me for a minute. Verse 9, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Don't hoard it. Don't try to keep it for yourself. That's not why it is given to you. And it's not good for you. And if you hoard it long enough, sooner or later, something's going to happen to it. It's going to rot. It's going to be stolen. Our stock market's going to crash. By the way, that wasn't just an example. That's a prognostication. We cannot continue in this country to live the way we have lived, where we rob Peter to pay Paul, and we owe everybody to pay Peter. We're banking on this life and this being all there is to it as a culture. So Jesus says, no. Don't store it. fact, he said, bank on eternity. He said, allow it to flow through you in such a way that you're investing in the next life. That you're investing in your spiritual welfare by the use of what is flowing through you. Verse 21, the most important thing in the world to you is what dominates your life. Wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart and mind go. The things that are most important to us dominate our thinking. And when they dominate our thinking, they dominate our movements to support that thinking. So we got to make more of it. Or we have to invest more time in this. 22 and 23. Very interesting passage. Your eyes are the light of your soul. What's the context? The context is wealth. So the context is our view of wealth. The reference to our eyes is referring to our view of wealth. Our view of dependence, whether it's on that wealth or it's on God, because he's about to shift to that part of it. Our view of stewardship, of it flowing through us to create eternity or it getting hung up here to be laid up. Now listen to this. Jesus says that view or those views determine whether you live life in the light or in the dark. He said if you have the wrong view, look how dark it really is. So verse 24, he said, you cannot do it. You cannot have two different masters. You can't hoard money and serve the master. You cannot serve money and serve the master. He said, you're going to hold on to one and you're going to let go of the other. 25 through 32. God's the giver of good gifts, James chapter 1 and verse 17. He takes care of those birds. He's going to take care of you. It means several things there. It means, number one, every gift you have came from Him. And you are just a steward. But it's also a reminder that you can bank it all day long and still lose it and have nothing to take care of yourself, or you can put it back in His hands and He's going to take care of you. Solomon dressed like a king. Said not even comparison to how God can dress the lilies of the field. Then the key comes in verse 33. Again, it's one of those passages we love, but we love it out of its context. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. What's the context? Get your eye right in reference to your wealth. Put God at the top, let everything flow through you, and then it works out. So then verse 34, and I have no idea why I stopped the reading at 33. I acted as if that was the end of the chapter, I guess. Quit worrying yourself to death. God's got you. And we've been talking about it in our Bible class on Sunday morning. This is very akin to when Peter says, hey, we gave up everything for you, Jesus. Well, you may have, but you've got all this family and all this wealth that's being shared among a body. You don't have to worry yourself to death. When we figure out that we are nothing more than stewards of everything we have been given, we get it. And we don't have to worry about the financial part of it. Because God's got it. So, back to our story. Did you notice how Green's approach to life and business align with Matthew chapter 6? He said, I'm a steward rather than an owner. From our perspective, did he build a successful business? Yeah. From his perspective, did he build a successful business? No, God did. And blessed him in the process. Psalm 50 and verse 10, God says, the cattle on 1,000 hills, all the beasts, they're mine. What do you own, David? What belongs to you? What about the kingdom that you're ruling, David? Does it belong to you? No, I gave it to you. All the sheep in your pasture, do they belong to you, David? No, I gave them to you. This one's coming from me personally, own nothing. Doesn't matter if my name is on the title, if it's on the deed, if I take care of it, if I get to choose how it is used in this world, I still do not own it. Job said it this way, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. I'm just holding it until He wants it back. I'm just holding it till He calls me in to give an account of my stewardship. Therefore, if I own nothing, I am a steward. I am someone who has been put in charge of someone else's wealth. God has said, I will put this in your hand for your lifetime. You're going to be held responsible for what you do with it, but you are the steward. If I do not own it, and it has simply been put in my care, then the one who does own it at some point will ask for it back. Which means I can choose to give it to him willingly as I live my life, or I can have it taken from me. If I choose to let it flow through me and return it to me, it cannot control me. It cannot dominate my life. I don't live and die based on whether I have $5 in my pocket or $5,000 in my pocket. If I decide that I am the owner of that which God has made me an overseer, I have then allowed that thing to become the owner, to become the master. It owns me. And yet I still have to return it to Him. But I have to return it to Him without all the blessings of no worry and guaranteed care and treasure in heaven, etc. So even logically, which one makes more sense? I'm giving it up anyway. Why not give it up in such a way that God says, hey, I'll return the blessings over and over and over again. Second thing about greed, notice his view of success. It comes from God. Do I have to do my part? Sure. I cannot take a seat in the front row and never move between now and the end of my life and expect God to dump Hobby Lobby in my lap. Do I have to work hard? Yes. The things that are worth having in this world and using as stewards require effort. Do I have to make good decisions? Do I have to have a plan? Do I have to take care of my end? Yes, yes, and yes. And when I do all of that and I cross every T and I dot every I, God chooses whether or not to bless my efforts. I am a success based on His desire for my efforts to be successful. Because if you don't think God can defeat you in the wrong effort, try Him. When I start taking credit, however, for what God does through me, what God does for me, well, just ask Saul and David and Solomon how that worked out for them. Saul, this is God speaking. We're paraphrasing, I understand. Saul, where were you when I chose you? Oh, I was hiding behind the baggage trying to make sure nobody saw me. I'm going to make you king of Israel. And now, we come back around 40 years later. Saul, you're taking my credit. I will break you. David, where were you when I chose you? You were in the shower trying to wash the sheep stink off of you. I just made you king over the most powerful nation with a special covenant to me. And now you're trying to take more than I gave you, Bathsheba. David, I will break you. You're going to understand where you came from, how you got to where you are, and what it takes to stay there. Solomon, where were you when I chose you? Well, you were the child of a relationship that should have never happened. You were immature and you were riding on your dad's fame. I made you the wisest man on the face of the earth and the wealthiest man on the face of the earth, and you have broken every rule I ever gave you because you got too big for your britches. I will break you. And I'll split your kingdom between two different people. I had better learn early, and I had better learn often, that everything I am, everything I have, and every success I experience belongs to God. Or else the day He reminds me of that may be very painful. Because He may call me in this life and say, hey, it's time to ante up. What'd you do with what I gave you? And I might get to live the rest of this life without those blessings. Even if I survive all the way through this life and I get to stand before Him on the day of judgment. I like the fact that Green says, hey, this goes beyond me. This goes down to my kids and my grandkids. He said, I have the rights and the responsibilities as a steward. I can sell this business and I can keep all the profits for myself. But as those profits added up, he said, that began to scare me. It didn't seem fair to me that I might change or ruin the future of my grandchildren who had never been born yet. Listen very carefully to me. We need to understand this as parents and grandparents. One of the tipping points in our society that has led to this spiral, this downhill slide, was the day that we decided as parents that we need to grant every wish, fulfill every desire, and make sure that our kids have it better than we had it. Could he have passed on $14 billion and his kids, quote, had it better than him? Yeah. Is the potential there to absolutely ruin them? Yeah. If you do not think passing on millions and billions does not change the lives of kids and grandkids, just study the lives of just a few, even, of those who grew up as heirs and heiresses of someone else's fortune. Ask Paris Hilton how stupid you have to be to go through billions of dollars in a heartbeat and make terrible decisions because somebody else gave you something you didn't work for and you have no idea what to do with it. He said, I'm not going to put that temptation in front of my kids. I'm not going to put that temptation in front of my grandkids. Does this mean I have to give away Hobby Lobby? Does this mean I have to, and I made it kind of a verb, to rich young ruler? No. Ananias and Sapphira, they come in, they present money, they're wanting more credit than belongs to them. Peter says, it was yours. You were the steward. You could sell it and keep it. You could sell it and keep part of it. Whatever, just square up and take responsibility for the actions you're taking. So no, Jesus has never come back beyond the rich young ruler and said, I need you because of your position to sell everything you have and give your Hobby Lobby to somebody else and come follow me. He tells that to the rich young ruler because that is his, Matthew 6, that is his issue. That is his hang-up. He's laying up all his treasure on earth and not banking on the next life at all. He's never asked me that. The question is, what am I doing with it during my stewardship? Can I go sell everything I have, give it to the church? Absolutely. I'm a steward. Can I keep it and allow it to flow through me and bless the church? Yeah. As long as I understand it is His, I will use it in the right way. And I will use it in a way that pleases Him. And I will keep the right attitude towards it. And the love of money will not be the issue. A clouded eye will not be the issue. Where my investments are being made will not be the issue. Now then, we are people who are thinking sometimes, I don't have to worry about it. I will never be worth $14.9 billion. That may be true, but it may be true because God has seen that you can't handle the $5 in your pocket. You ever thought about that? Why is somebody else's business more successful? I put in the same amount of hours, and by the way, David Green still works 6 days a week. Goes into the office, make sure things run the way that he wants them to run. Well, why can't I? Well, God wants to know what you did with the $5 you had last week or the $10 you had the week before that. If you didn't steward it in his kingdom, why in the world would he trust you with $14 billion? And if you don't think that's the exact case, look at what the master told the stewards in the parable of the talents. First two to come up on stage, I'm going to paraphrase. You handled a little, I'm going to let you try your hand at handling a lot. See how that works? You stewarded $20, I'll let you steward $100 next. What did he tell the third one? You couldn't handle a little bit, no more for you. What's that line from the soup Nazi in Seinfeld? No soup for you? No more for you. One other thing, and it was really at the very beginning, and it just barely commented on it, so I didn't talk about it a whole lot when I was reading it, but it was, I chose God. He said, this decision was made when I chose God. That's interesting. A whole lot of our religious world would say, well, God chose me, that I was predestined to salvation, I was predestined to success. He said, no. I chose God. God didn't tell me what to do with it when I chose Him. I chose God, and everything else, after I chose to be a disciple, by putting God first, became the natural result of that. I'm giving away a business because I put God first in my life, and I've reached the point that I understand that that money can ruin us. And so I'm taking it out of my family because I chose God. When I put God first, and I put God first in view of my life, my time, my mind, my family, my car, my money, my talent, my everything, and I view those things as nothing more than part of my stewardship. That every minute I have is a gift that I'm stewarding. That every thought I have is a gift that I am stewarding. It's going to flow through me and it's going to bless me and all those around me like the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee is flooded with fresh water. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. As water flows down through the Jordan. See, a Galilee blesses everything around it. Those blessings continue to flow through down the Jordan, and they end up where? They end up in the lowest spot on the face of the earth, the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea puts itself first. If I put myself first and my money first and my family first and my time first, the blessings God is allowing to flow to me are getting stuck. And what did it do? It killed the Dead Sea. If the blessings do not flow through, if they get clogged up, it'll kill me. I know that because all the way back in Matthew 6, we said, if your eye's healthy, if you understand how to see this, the rest of you's healthy. If you don't understand how to see it, the rest of you's dark. If you want to learn to bless and be blessed by a multi-billion dollar company, learn to bless and be blessed by a minimum wage or whatever else you make. And then when you learn the lesson, don't tell them what God can do through you. We are stewards of everything in our lives. So as we close, the question is, am I putting God first? And then you fill in the blank with whatever part. Am I putting God first in my time? Am I a steward of my time? Am I putting God first in my mind? Am I a steward of every thought process? Am I putting God first in my family? Am I stewarding my family? Am I understanding that I'm giving my family back to God at some point? And I have to account for that. My money, my talent, my whatever. If not, the day of accounting looms. What will your excuse be? Oh, I didn't steward the way you needed me to because there is no way to finish that sentence in a way that pleases God. You're also a steward of your soul. And if your soul is corrupted by sin this morning and you have not gone back to the cross and given it to Christ Jesus, your stewardship's not going so well. So please obey the gospel. If there's anything that you need this morning, any help understanding what we've talked about, explanation of the gospel, if you need to obey the gospel, please come while we stand and sing.